Let's go. Come in tight because we have to celebrate a big recruiting get for Brian Kelly in 2025. Also, who will be the November breakout star? We normally think of it as a skill position player, but I've got one sleeper for you that showed me some promise versus Texas A&M. Let's freaking, come on, I need more energy, Leah.
It's Power Hour, LSU.
PHL, extra little bit of swag, an extra little bit of taste.
Yeah. Man, I'm headed to the field. Terror of the tiger, I'ma always keep it real. Everything gon' get devoured, it's the power. LSU with Carter, it's the power. LSU with Carter, man, I'm headed to the field. Terror of the tiger, I'ma always keep it real. Everything gon' get devoured, it's the power. LSU with Carter, it's the power. LSU with Carter.
Pretty big news that Jacoby and Guillory has decided to come back for next season, as he was on the Collada show a little earlier today to say he will play a senior season at LSU. So he still had a redshirt year available. He decides to take this medical redshirt year. Obviously, he tore his ACL early in the season, well, his Achilles. And now he is in a position to come back and play one final year for the Tigers. And I understand that when it comes to recruiting, we tend to think of Bryce Underwood, or we tend to think of just any wide receiver, defensive end, someone that you never heard of last week. Boom, they magically commit to LSU, and that excites you. It gets a lot of views. It gets a lot of interest. It's good to post all over social media. But the truth is, so many of those guys do not pan out. It is better to have known quantities to say, hey, I am not ending on that accord. And Jacoby and Guillory will be coming back. It'll be his fifth season. That's another year of excellence, another year of Brad Davis's coaching. And obviously, will he be fully healthy for the season opener next year? Hopefully he will be. But the fact that you have one really good defensive tackle piece for sure coming back next year, add in Ahmad Bro, add in Dominic McKinley, that's a really good trio of DTs. And that doesn't mean that any of the new guys coming in, like Brown and those guys, aren't going to be any good as true freshmen. And I would like to think LSU is going to be very active in the transfer portal. So 2025 will not be a season where all offseason we are wondering about LSU's defensive tackle room like we did all this summer. Now, the truth is, has LSU defensive tackles, have they played well this season? Well, they haven't been phenomenal, but they overall have been pretty good. It's not been the biggest weakness of LSU's defense. It was the biggest question mark, but no longer is that the case. So big shout out to Jacoby and Guillory. I also think he really didn't have another option in this spot because, well, he was in a spot where you kind of sort of need to come back. I mean, he didn't really have much NFL promise coming off an injury and not much elite game film. He's got a lot of good game film out there. And of course, this was supposed to be his final season, his prime year. So pumped up about that. Jacobian's dad also watches the channel, so I'm really excited to have him back for a full season. He watched us anyway, even before Jacobian started playing at LSU. So really pumped up about this news. Now, we get to who will be the November star. Who is going to be the guy that will step up and take the Tigers to the next level? And I want to sing the praises of Paul Mbenga, all right? This is what's been really impressive about what he did versus Texas A&M. Was it a good performance? No. Was it terrible? No. It was honestly pretty good for a year two, three-star backup to the backup offensive guard. You know, if this would have happened 3 weeks ago, before Tyree Adams had his surgery, Tyree Adams probably would have been the one that stepped in. So the fact that Paul Mbinga went out there and was just not terrible was pretty good, because a few weeks ago he wouldn't have been out there as one of our top backup offensive linemen. I really appreciated his competitiveness, his fight in that game in a really difficult spot. And I thought overall he played admirably. Now, do I feel pretty good about Garrett Dellinger going into Alabama? I would put it about a 55% chance that he's going to tough it out and be healthy enough to play versus the Alabama Crimson Tide. And he will be desperately needed. Up to this point in the season, you can make a very strong case that he's been LSU's best offensive lineman. I would still probably go with Will Campbell, but truth be told, Garrett Dellinger has just been so good for LSU at left guard, and we really need all our best guns to beat Alabama in the de facto playoff game. So I truly believe in Paul Mbinga moving forward, but I'm hoping that Garrett Dellinger comes back. So in the chat right now, let me know who your November breakout star will be. Don't give me Aaron Anderson. Don't give me Kyron Lacy. Don't give me Mason Taylor or Garrett Nussmeier. We know those guys are good. Who is going to step up? Is it going to be Chris Hilton? Is it going to be Deshaun Womack on defense? Who will it be? Let me know. Now, we say hi to AHM. We say hi to LA Mom on a very happy Halloween and a Friday Eve. And who is this? Hey. Oh, she's kind of pretty. I love her. Now, next thing. And I really want this to be crystal clear. This will be a fun Saturday weekend of college football. And I want to share this take. Yet again, it's something that's been brewing inside me for a while. I believe college football season should be longer than 12 games. I think every team should play 13 regular season games. I do. And continue this double bye week. I love the double bye as a college football fan. I would love a double bye in the NFL as well. I don't think bye weeks are as important to the college, to the NFL fan as it is to the college football fan, because it does free up two Saturdays throughout the course of the season. Now, am I happier when an LSU football game is happening than not? Yes, I don't particularly love bye weeks, but it is a good break from the action. And on top of that, we want the best players on each and every team to be healthy, right? Two bye weeks are really, really good for the health of your roster. And the fact that we get this bye week to get Garrett Dellinger healthy is good, but it's also just a breath of fresh air. So obviously every season has not been a double bye. We've had some seasons where there were a double bye, but I love it, and I want to workshop that take at the beginning. Normally, my super hot, interesting college football takes are for the later portion of our live streams, but we're not going to be going too long because we do have Halloween candy to hand out, and I don't want the doorbell to ring and my sissy mama go absolutely crazy. So I am a true believer in stretching out the college football season. I think players want an extra game. I know fans want an extra game. I know teams want an extra game. But Kyle, what about the playoff? And it stretches till for. That's why you got a 105-man roster and a double bye week. All right. It's college football. D2 doesn't have a problem with 20, a gazillion game long season. They don't have a problem with it. More games. And I'm not going to say more games the better, because you can reach a saturation point. I hate that the NFL went to 17 games. I thought 16 was the best, but I don't mind 17. I would like a double bye in the NFL. And I would also like 13 in college football, because you can honestly help all parties involved out, right? If you give 13 games, you're still able to keep the rent and wins, and you can add a conference game. So I'm down with it. Who says no? Now, we can get into a slippery slope of a gazillion different college football topics and rules to where we can improve the sport. But I think 13, and you could even have a rule set in place where not every player, if you're worried about the rest or whatever, not every player is allowed to play every game. Or you can't play, and then you could strategize when to play. I'm just spitballing here. I don't really like that rule. I was just trying to think of something. But I am a believer in stretching it out and keeping the double bye week. Start it the week before Labor Day weekend. Okay? So I had a skipper. Chance says the NFL is stretching out to 18 as well. Now, I really, really, really hope hit the like button, subscribe. Also, go to our PHL Patreon. Dropped a 30-minute episode. I say 30. I think it was 20 or 30. I don't remember. I just pushed record, and I shared my full stock up and stock down LSU Tiger report. We went down the roster, and we picked out some players whose future at LSU looks a little murky now, and some players who have moved up the echelon for Brian Kelly. So I am a true believer in the Patreon. I think everybody gets their money's worth. You get my Discord service. You get a Joe Burrow card in the mail. Only $9.99 a month. There's also a $7.77 tier. There are plenty of ways you could support us as well. And I think we're going to get to our Venmo Cash App goal. You see, 10 Venmos or 10 Super Chats, and we'll give out another autographed LSU card. In fact, if we get there, I just got this card in the mail. You see, I haven't even opened it yet. Actually, I have two of these now. We'll give out this Joe Burrow card. Fancy, smancy, Spectra rookie auto. This one numbered? I don't think it's numbered. But we'll get this out if we get to a hundo and supers. Now, I want you to really take in the next thing that we're about to talk about. And that is the rotation of the skill position players. It infuriates quite a few of you that the running back rotation isn't better. You know, I pushed back a little bit on last time I was on Tiger Bait with Preston Guy. As far as the running back rotation is concerned, I think Josh Williams is actually a fine short yardage back. I just think our short yardage play calling hasn't been the best. You know, I've heard basically everything as far as LSU's running back rotation is concerned. What I would do from this point forward, though, now that we're at this home stretch, I am playing Caden Durham minimum 75% of the snaps, minimum. I understand you probably lose some in pass protection, but I want to go out with my best players. And at this juncture, he's been LSU's best running back. But now your wide receiver room is a little corkscrewed, if you will. It's got new pieces into it with Chris Hilton there. We'll see what happens with CJ Daniels. You know, Aaron Anderson, is everybody fully healthy there? I don't know. You know, you're wondering about the overall health of that room, right? I've heard of different guys being banged up. I heard pretty early about the CJ Daniels news. You know, he toughed it out versus Arkansas. And then you had a missed game mixed in there versus Ole Miss. And then you have the Texas A&M situation where he played some and then had to leave. Now you got Chris back in. How is this all going to work out? Well, to me, the more interesting thing has been Tre'Davious Green getting more snaps at receiver. And as a true freshman, he's done some really good things. He really has. You know, in the red zone, he's been a huge help up to this point. And now you begin to wonder, what is the tight end rotation going to look like? Well, at this point, it's going to be so much Mason Taylor towards the end of the season. Will we see Marc Amarion Pimpton? That looks more and more daily like it's going to be a year three situation for him, where the tight end room will be wide open. I am having a tough time believing Mason Taylor is going to come back. I would love him to. He's one of the best LSU football players of this era, especially at the tight end position. But I don't see a world where he comes back knowing everything that he's given to this program. It's going to be tough. Now, I think the defense rotation gets more interesting. So we got the good news that Jacoby Guillory is going to be back, and the defensive tackle room next year for LSU is going to be very hyped up, right? It's going to be very good. Depending on how a few recruits land here at the end of this cycle, it could get even better. I am really, really excited in the second half to see what Deshaun Womack does. This going into the season, I had felt very lukewarm on him, right? And then he has just gotten better and better and better, as have all the defensive ends in the room under Kevin Peoples. Then you worry about the back half of the defense and, you know, the thinnest room on LSU's team right now is linebacker, right? It is a tough, tough, tough room. The two top backups at our off-ball linebacker position are both true freshmen. And now we're in a spot where you're hoping for no targeting calls. You're hoping for no injuries or anything along those lines. But, you know, Whit Weeks, not his best game versus Texas A&M. And he really has only had one other game where he wasn't great, and that was against South Carolina. He has had issues with the zone read stuff, right? And then we get to the secondary for LSU. And I felt a lot better about Sage Ryan. I think Jarden Gilbert is putting together a pretty nice season, kind of playing this Andre Sam type of role. He's been pretty good. And then corners really shaped out to be fine with Zy Alexander and Ashton Stamps. You know, this LSU defense, of course, has been good, right? I don't think you could say that they have been excellent. I don't think you could say they have been terrible, but they are serviceable. They have a good yard per play number around middle of the pack in the SEC. There are some rankings, such as EPA, where they could be more efficient. But overall, this group has been fine. But I think a lot of us would agree that next year you are worrying a little bit about the pass rush, and versus these four mobile quarterbacks the rest of the way, can this unit figure out how to stop the zone read together as a team, right? Because you're going to see a lot of it, especially considering, we haven't been able to stop it. And, you know, as we move forward as a program, quarterbacks are only becoming more mobile. This will be probably this season the most mobile set of quarterbacks that we've played ever. And we've played quite a few last year. Now, the year before, I think we played a lot of pocket quarterbacks, but outside of Miller Moss, there really haven't been many statues on LSU's schedule, and now that's only going to ramp up. So quarterback spying and doing your role is going to be so massive as we get towards the end of this season. Okay? Now, we say hi to Christopher. He's had a chance as well. And Skipper, good to see you. Now, I won't be going too long tonight because there are some Halloween things that I have to go do in the neighborhood. I like being present for all the kiddos. Let's see. I wanted to make sure I didn't miss anything here. Before I get into what we did today on Power Hour NFL. I don't really want to talk Bryce Underwood today, but we'll see. Now, today on Power Hour NFL, I released a full film study on Garrett Nussmeier, and I tried to do it as well as I possibly could from a neutral viewpoint. And it's interesting, you know, I release a video like that and, you know, I get accused of making excuses for Garrett Nussmeier, and that's fine. That's perfectly fine. That happens when you're in this position, okay? I try to be as positive as I can, and quarterback conversation is as volatile as it can be. Doesn't matter who the quarterback is. It's always volatile. And one thing I found to be very interesting about Garrett Nussmeier is there is a lot of myths. There are some falsehoods about Garrett out there. Does he throw untimely interceptions? Yes. Did he throw the game away versus Texas A&M? Yes. If you're up 17-7 and rolling out to the left, and you had an open scramble drill, come back, and you throw the ball across your body in a floater situation to a 5'10 receiver, you should be destroyed for that loss, especially if you have two other picks that were your fault and other plays in the second half of that game where the ball should have been picked off. He was noticeably rattled after that first interception, and mentally he wasn't able to overcome it. Okay. But with all those turnovers, let me include one very truthful thing, is that his turnover worthy play rate isn't as high as I thought it would be. In fact, it's of the SEC quarterbacks, it's one of the lower turnover worthy play rates. Now, why is that the case? Well, he has thrown 7 interceptions in the last 4 games, and he only threw 2 in his first 4 games. But it's because we're asking him to throw the football so much. Now, he shouldn't be throwing interceptions quite like that. But it is partially a design flaw of your offense when in a game you were winning 17-10, you threw the football 50 times. Normally, when you see a quarterback throw the football 50 times, it's a game in which you're losing by a lot, and you're having to throw to get back into the game. But Garrett Nussmeier's had to play a few of these games where he's thrown 40-plus throws, and it's an issue. It's a major issue. Now, some of that's on him. Some of that's not him scrambling when the opportunities are presented. But overall, his turnover-worthy play rate, I thought, was going to be worse than it was, and in fact, it wasn't. Now, how are turnover-worthy plays charted? Well, it can be charted in many different ways. I actually believe there were more than what PFF said and what SEC StatCat said, but it gets into a subjective opinion on what you consider to be a turnover-worthy play. So, that was interesting. One more thing about Garrett Nussmeier, and this really blows my mind. Analytically, that makes him look a lot better than how people view him right now. Because I think most people view Garrett having a C, C plus, B minus season. Garrett has not had a ESPN QBR below 70 all year. Let me repeat. Garrett Nussmeier has not had a QBR, ESPN QBR, below 70 all season, including this game where he threw 2 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. And ESPN QBR tends to lean towards running. Quarterbacks that run, right? A lot of analytics, like EPA per play, shows favoritism to quarterbacks who run. And why is that the case? Well, if you have a QB who can scramble, that's an amazingly efficient play because you're not only rushing for yards, there is no transaction of the ball that's happening, right? You're not throwing a ball to a receiver and it get tipped up and picked. There's no handoff where you can fumble the handoff. Quarterback scrambles are very efficient plays. We don't have that at all with Garrett. We have no running game at all. And Garrett Nussmeier, in every game, 70-plus QBR. Now, what does that mean? Well, 50 is a replacement-level QBR. That means any quarterback could step in and just your average baseline starter. To have a 70-plus QBR in every game is really good. It's really, really good. It's really hard to do. So that's another positive about Garrett Nussmeier. Now, after doing my NFL film study today, I'm going to give you what to me is the biggest negative with Nuss up to this point. And it's not, believe it or not, it is not the interceptions. Book your 360 spin booth experience today with Zion Imaging. Yes, that's my buddy Jaron Thomas, who started this venture years ago. And look at the smiles on these faces. This state-of-the-art photo booth is so incredible. I work in the wedding and event industry, and anytime I see a 360 photo booth, it takes your event, whether it's a reunion, a wedding, a conference, no matter what it is, it takes it to another level. Give them a follow on Facebook. Book them today. There is a special deal going on now where you can get up to 40% off. This is all the info. Give them a call today, 318-469-4265, or go to Zion Imaging. That's xyanimaging.com. Home is where the heart is, and our friends at NOPOD Roofing really takes that to heart. 504-810-8744. Give them a call today for all of your roofing needs. And one of my favorite things about NOPOD Roofing is their versatility. They not only do roofing, they do siding, they do painting, they do tree removal, fencing, anything home improvement. Our friends at NOPOD will get you straight. Give them a call today at 504-810-8744 and let them know PHL and Carter the Power sent you. We never overpromise and always overdeliver with NOPOD, baby. Let's go. Dental health is wealth, and our friends at Sequoia Dental are looking to help you feel like a more confident person. Dr. William Wilson and his team of experts do everything in their power to make this experience for you not only comfortable, but fun. Yes, take a look at this after and before photo. That guy definitely got himself a date thanks to Sequoia Dental. From teeth whitening to cosmetic surgery to guess what? Botox. Yes, they do Botox. Call my friend Dr. William Wilson today, or just go book your appointment at sequoiadental.com. Big shout out as well to our friends at nooffseason.com. Proud partners of everything Power Hour LSU, Power Hour SEC, and Power Hour NFL. One thing that's concerned me about Nuss is our deep balls. I will say, and once again, smarter people than me can comment on this, but I am not sure if we've had as many deep balls presented to us as we did last year. Part of the presenting of deep balls is because we did have Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr. who could just run by anybody. But when we have had opportunities to throw deep passes, it's not been the most accurate ball in the world. Now, we have that Aaron Anderson slot fade ball versus South Carolina, and you have the Kyle Parker touchdown versus UCLA, but we haven't been able to get as vertical, which is part of the reason why I've wanted us to stop running four verts or variations of it. So I think that's a problem. It's been a problem, and I feel Garrett's accuracy on those types of throws could be better. Now, when it comes to an in-breaker, I'm not sure if there has ever been an LSU quarterback better at throwing an in-breaker than Garrett Nussmeier. The dude is absolutely lethal on digs and slants. Lethal. I mean, some of the best anticipation you will ever see on that. And obviously, the most famous example is the Aaron Anderson fourth down play. But in-breakers, overs, things over the middle, has been really impressive from Garrett Nussmeier. I mean, really impressive. So check it out, Power Hour NFL. You get my full breakdown. And we break down some of his older plays as well. Okay? Everybody, welcome. Filthy from the Football Card Quest, also a member of the NoOffseason.com network. Good to see you. So that's your boy. Well, his dad is also coaching up. His dad's also coaching up Jalen Hurts. I don't think you knew that, Filthy. All right. Let's go to Chance. To call LSU's run game inept against Texas A&M is an understatement. Ness is having to do too much, and the special team sucks. Yeah, and that's about where I stand. You know, I don't think people quite grasp. Like, when you just say, hey, thus turnovers, it's a non-negotiable. And I've said that to a certain extent. He did throw the game away, and he doesn't need to throw those picks. I do want it to be known that if he's not actually throwing the football, we're not moving the football at all. And I've heard plenty arguments saying, well, let's just run the ball. We can't. The schemes aren't as creative. Inside zone has been the framework of our offense, and we started seeing some cracks in our inside zone scheme last year. You know, we've tried outside zone runs, can't do that. I mean, our outside zone blocking has been so unfreaking believably atrocious. We've tried counter runs. We run into each other. We don't get our blocks clean enough on counter. I think we tip away when we're running counter, and basically counters when you're pulling a guard and tight end around or a guard and tackle around. It's not really been something we've done all too well in the Brian Kelly era. Yeah. What do you do? Now, friend of the show, Max Toscano, did a long Twitter thread on LSU's run game. And I tweeted it out. You can see it for yourself at Power Hour LSU. And it gets a lot more technical than I can just in like a regular live stream like this. He wants us to do more duo runs. And duo is somewhat like inside zone. It's really, I struggle with telling the difference. It's really hard. And sometimes those rules of duo can change based on the alignments. But the thing I like about duo is it is very heavily reliant on double teams. And right now, with our interior offensive line having the issues that it's had, we need to double as much as we possibly can. So I'm down for trying to do more duo runs, but, you know, it's a mess. It is a mess. Okay. Let's go to Gino. This is the first LSU video I've watched all week since A&M lost. And you watch them all, including Gordy and OTB. Well, I'm glad I'm with these two established shows. Are you talking about Chris Gordy or Jordy? I love me some Chris Gordy. Chris Gordy's a goat. So depressing after a loss. Yeah, look, I think the way it went down is how it hurts so many people. Kedrick, thank you for the super. Kedrick, you get to pick the next topic. Go right on ahead. Okay. What's the story on Jalen Lee? I don't know. You tell me. I know he's been hurt, but, you know, he's kind of just been phased out. I don't know if he was ever really phased in. But there you go. So I want to talk about Kedrick's Super Chat question. Yes, we can objectively admit that Garrett Nussmeier threw us out of the game. But especially with the 17-7 lead. And of course, we could have stopped zone read runs and tried our best to win that game ugly. With that said, all right, at some point the dam was going to break when you put that much on his shoulders. And I think it is beyond time for us to admit that there has just been too much on his shoulders in all our victories as well. Four players have really carried us this year, and that's Garrett, Mason, Aaron, and Kyron. CJ's been very good. Caden Durham has been spectacular. And I think Will's been pretty good. So I think seven players have really propelled us. And there's been so much weight on those seven guys. I think Emory Jones has had his moments. It hadn't been, you know, the all-pro year that we thought. But it's a problem. And Garrett needs to eat sacks. You've just got to eat sacks. But the first interception is one of the worst interceptions I've seen an LSU quarterback make. It really was. Knowing the time and the place and the score was 17-7. You're up by double digits. And the thing about the interception is, yes, they went out there, Texas A&M, and scored on the very next play. But, you know, if you punt the football, you're forcing Marcel Reed to drive down the field. And the fact that he only threw two passes and was still able to run you out the building is very concerning. Okay? And it's like we've never seen that stuff before. But to your point, Kedrick, how do we win out? Can LSU win out? I want you in the chat right now, and we'll be asking this a lot on Sunday night. We will do a live stream on Sunday night, by the way. No film study Sunday because obviously there's no game on Sunday. But what I want you to do, if you're watching this down the road or if you're listening to this via podcast, tag me on Twitter at PowerHourLSU. What is your percentage chance that LSU goes 4-0? Now, Preston Guy last night on his show told me 33%, which I think is a crazy high percentage chance. Like, I'm not sure if Georgia's got a 33% chance to win out with their schedule. Well, they do. I would say it's probably about a little bit higher than that. But 33% is high. It's high. Ohio State doesn't. And I would put Ohio State about that percentage. And they're a better team than us. So this is really hard, this final four schedule. Now, is it insurmountable? No. You have a talent advantage in every game outside of Alabama, but all four of these teams are solid. Oklahoma, of course, has no offense, but defensively, you know they're going to be good. They do have to play Alabama the week before they play you. Vanderbilt will get a bye week before they play you, and then they know Tennessee is around the corner. Then, of course, you got to go to Florida. That might be a must-win game for them when it comes to bowl eligibility. And you got to go play a quarterback that is uber talented in DJ Lagway. And then, of course, you have Jalen Milroe, who's good this weekend. So give me your percentage chance. And I still believe I'd put LSU at about a 10 to 15% chance of winning all four of these games. I think that's pretty fair. Oh, Kedrick! Oh, Let's go. Kedrick says, I am putting the same percentage chance that LSU goes 4-0 the rest of the way as there is water on the face of the earth. I freaking love it. And guess what? Kedrick, I'll be honest. If we do win out, I am pouring water on the top of my head for 5 minutes straight. I mean, just straight, just dousing me with water. We are honoring the great Tim Robinson. I'm going to eat a steak.
Yeah.
I'm going to do sloppy steaks. We're going to slop them up. Now, I mean, pour just 5 minutes of water straight on my head if we go 4-0 the rest of the way. I'm going to need a snorkel to do the show. A snorkel! 5 straight minutes. I don't know how that would even look. How would that even look? Would I need... Yeah, have you ever seen those assembly lines of people with the buckets that climb up the ladders? Would I need those people to climb up a ladder and just keep pouring? Like, who do you even contact? Let's go to Ryan. Do you think Nuss stays if he ends up being a projected first-round pick? I do. I do think Garrett Nussmeier stays for a few reasons, all right? And once again, if you're just joining us, on my main NFL channel, I did release a Garrett Nussmeier NFL film study on how I feel about him as an NFL quarterback. Okay? And it is different because, you know, when I analyze Nuss, I am analyzing him from the vantage point of a college quarterback, right? Like, it's the same thing I always bring up about Jamarcus Russell. Yeah, it didn't work out in the NFL, but did I want it to work out for him in the NFL? Yes. Do I care about these players in the NFL? Yes. But truth be told, he was great at LSU. So when I analyze Jamarcus Russell, I give you how he was at LSU. Same thing is true with Garrett Nussmeier. So in my NFL film study, I break down things from an NFL level. Hash marks are changed, all those different things. So for Garrett to justifiably go in the first round, he would need to get information like J.J. McCarthy got, all right? And if you remember correctly, pretty early in the process, I told everyone, hey, I'm hearing that J.J. McCarthy is going to be a bona fide first-round pick. I had also heard that some teams were thinking about taking him over Jaden. And there were people that really liked McCarthy that much. I'm serious. And obviously, the Commanders came to their senses and took not only Jaden over McCarthy, but took him over Drake May. And, you know, J.J. McCarthy went in the first round. And this would be my question for the J.J. McCarthy trade or draft pick, right? Six quarterbacks went in the first round. Is him being in Minnesota and sitting for a full season, which he would have, regardless if he got hurt, is that better than him actually getting a full extra year of actual reps at the quarterback position? I don't know. All right, we got a few playoff questions coming in. We'll get to them, Nick. By the way, if you want your question to be answered immediately, please super chat. But I'm going to try to get to every single one of them. Do have some Halloween stuff that we're going to have to go do tonight. And no, I'm not going trick-or-treating. I would love to, though. I do want this to be clear. The NFL has also let it be known. And the cool thing about Power Hour NFL growing a little bit is people start noticing you. And I hope it blows up or whatever. There are quite a few teams that aren't as patient with young quarterback development. And you got to think these are powerful, greedy owners who love nothing more than cheap labor. There are few things that very rich people love more than cheap labor. Always remember that. And what makes cheap labor better is if it's productive. Now, what do I mean by all that? Well, these teams know that the rookie pay scale and the rookie years of a quarterback's draft are so valuable because you're getting such high value out of the game's most valuable position for suppressed prices, right? Like, Jaden Daniels' true worth to the Commanders right now is $50 million a year, what Joe Burrow is getting basically. But he's got to work for cheap because that's how, you know, the CBA is signed and all that stuff. So what does that mean? Well, owners just aren't as patient anymore. They want what the other teams have had, right? Owners are pissed that Mike Brown of the Bengals got cheap Joe Burrow rookie pay scale labor before obviously having to pay him what he got paid. Same thing is true with the 49ers and Brock Purdy. They got cheap. They got cheap labor, right? So now teams really want you to be good because you're getting it from both sides, right? You're getting surprisingly good rookie quarterback play, and you're getting it on the cheap, right? So, you know, there's so much more pressure if you are thrusted right into the fray as a rookie now more than ever to be good right away. CJ Stroud, another good example of this. So I would lean at this point, Garrett Nussmeier, 60 to 70% coming back next season. He would need to catapult to the very tip toppity top of the quarterback pick or range to really want to leave. Now, the question becomes, who all is ahead of Garrett Nussmeier in the quarterback hierarchy when it comes to the NFL draft? Cam Ward probably is at this point. Shedeur Sanders probably is at this point. Quinn Ewers is hit or miss. I would take Garrett over Quinn Ewers. Jackson Dart could be someone ahead of Garrett Nussmeier, but I think that ship has sailed. Carson Beck is someone that I think would go ahead of Garrett. So it's still not clear, but one thing we do know is if Garrett decided to come back and play one more season, he would be far and away the number one quarterback prospect for the next class because there is no great sophomore quarterback that's out there. There's just not. Now, there's plenty of good ones, but there's no, like, can't-miss superstar one for the next class. So at this point, I would put, based on what I saw, because Garrett Nussmeier also isn't as much as I pumped him up in this video and as much as I've criticized him, I will tell you there's still a lot of things that he does and gets away with that you cannot get away with in the NFL. Okay. Say hi to Nurse Court. We say hi to Sibley. Jay Forbes is in here as well. Everybody, welcome Nick to the channel. Nick Rizzuto holding it down on the face space. I wish I had a bigger MySpace Facebook following. I just do not click on Facebook. I don't know why. What happens to LSU if we went out and lose the SEC championship? Do we still make the playoffs, or is it better to win out and not go to the SEC championship to get to the playoffs at 10-2? Yeah, okay. It all depends on how everything else in the SEC plays out. All right, so let's put this on the screen. Of course, let's say, I don't know. I mean, there's just so many different scenarios here. Obviously, if you're LSU, you want as many two-loss or three-loss SEC teams as possible. Right. So in many ways, you're cheering. Let's see, who would you want to cheer for? I've gone back and forth on this. Do you want Ole Miss to beat Georgia or do you not? I really don't know. I've gone back and forth on it. But the fact that everybody does have a loss, if not multiple losses, obviously Tennessee only has one loss, A&M only has one loss, Georgia only has one conference loss. There are a lot of teams. Well, A&M has no conference losses. Excuse me. There are a lot of teams that are in this kind of weird mid-range. There is no Mount Everest, if you will, in the SEC this year. Alabama having two losses and just these upsets of non-contenders to teams that are actually contending really throw wrenches into the entire equation, right? With Ole Miss losing to Kentucky and Tennessee losing to Arkansas and Alabama losing to Vanderbilt. There's just so much. But I think your big concern, Nick, is let's say LSU or any school for that matter gets into the SEC championship game as a two-loss team, and there are other SEC two-loss teams that don't get into the SEC championship, and let's say LSU is at school and they get a third loss, do the other two-loss teams jump LSU? I think the question would be is how did that SEC championship game play out? You know, the good thing about LSU is one of their losses was close. And I do think one thing that is going to work against them is the final score of the A&M game did get a little haywire. I think losses are the most valuable asset in college football. It is the single most important thing, avoiding losses. How many losses do you have oftentimes determines your fate. It's not who you beat. It's not how many wins. It's how many losses do you have. I know it sounds confusing, but it is a more important thing in the equation. But next to losing, it's how you lose. And the A&M score looks like a blowout. 38-23 looks like a comfortable win when it wasn't the case. Okay? Right when I say I wish I could grow on Facebook, I swear to God, I get a message from someone from a different country saying how to grow your Facebook. Now, here's what we're going to do. In the next 5 to 10 minutes, I'm going to answer as many questions as we possibly can. If we super chat, we'll keep it going. Yeah, Arch, going into next season, would have more NFL draft type, but he was only going to be a first-year starter. I just think with NIL being the way that it is, college being easier, and now seeing so many rookie quarterbacks get benched, I don't think people quite understand how disastrous Caleb's season has been. Caleb Williams, this season has been a whole bag of ass from him. He has been terrible. Who are the rookie quarterbacks that have been good? Jaden Daniels and Bo Nix. What are they? They're old. They're old for rookies. They both have 5 years of starts at the collegiate level. Five. Everybody, welcome John Bro to the channel. We always want to make first-timers feel welcome, John. By the way, if you are a first-timer, we do have a lot trickling in. I don't know why, because it's spooky Halloween day. Let's go, John. Let's go. And Drake May has looked good, full disclosure. But I was really high on Drake May. Like, that, you can go back and listen to the live streams of, like, in no world should you take Drake May over Jaden Daniels. I wouldn't do it. But I could understand why somebody would see that and want to do that. Drake May, I think, is going to be really good. Okay. Let's go to Johnny. He says, Carter, do you think we should run Caleb Jackson more? That's a good question. And the answer to that is no. Right now, it really doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter who is running the football. I do think, and I think Kedrick made this point a few weeks ago after the South Carolina game, and I made this point as well. I just think at this point, Caden Durham is just so much better than, honestly, anyone that touches a football. He's just that much more lethal after the touch. We want to get as many touches to him as we possibly can. And look, if you'd have told me before the season, hey, Kyren would be having the season that we expect him. Aaron Anderson would exceed expectations. I would feel pretty good about our offense, but our offense obviously in many ways is broken because you can't run the football. No, you can't run the football. But, you know, if you actually go back and look, Caleb had some vision issues, right? And, you know, they weren't just terrible, but I think Caleb was the perfect back to put next to Jaden Daniels, right? Because he is a load. He gets to the hole quickly. And, you know, that's part of the benefit of Jaden being your quarterback is that your ends have to play flat-footed. And if you're flat-footed and a 250 or 225-pound back who runs a legit 4.5 is running through there, you don't have much of a chance. Oh, you're going through the Arkansas Ozarks. Let's go. Some of the most beautiful, beautiful country is the Arkansas Ozarks. Ah, oh, Joseph. Joseph said that this was a pause. He's a load, pause, and gets to the hole quickly. Gets to the hole quickly. I'm trying to think of this. Yeah, that's pause worthy. It's pause worthy. I did get a message from a PHL viewer. Is this the Senator John Bro? If it is, welcome. I still got my I voted sticker on. Welcome. We welcome in all political affiliations. Let's see. Let's go to Kedrick's follow up here. Yes, LSU should have been A&M. Had a better, for a good point of the game, he had a better yards per play. Their starter was tanking, whatever the case may be. We should have beaten them. But they did more to not lose the game. And look, you can look at it this way as well, that things have just kind of evened itself out. I think Ole Miss was better than LSU when we played them. But we still won the game. I felt we were better than Texas A&M. They won the game. What did both of those teams have in common? Well, I think Ole Miss did more to lose the game. And LSU, of course, went out there and won it with, obviously, the clutch, Nussmeier, fourth down stops, Isaiah Alexander interception. But they did a lot to lose it. They had a post-game win expectancy of 75% per CFP data. .com, not CFP data. Actually, I think it was CFP data. CFPdata.com. And, you know, versus A&M, we did a lot to lose it. So there you go. I hope you guys enjoyed this. Don't forget, we will be live Sunday night, the rare in-season Sunday night live stream at 8 p.m. Central. I hope you join us there. It's going to be so much fun. We're going to be recapping the bye week, everything that went down. Big shout out once again, Brian Kelly getting a big recruit back for 2025. That, of course, is Jacobian Guillory. And we get another super chat and we'll keep it going. We're not signing off. I get a super chat here from Julie. Do I think South Carolina could beat Texas A&M? She says Josh Pate put him on upset alert. Let's talk about it. So obviously, you know, Josh Pate is his own person. And, you know, I have a lot of respect for him. Do I think South Carolina can win? Yes, because I don't think with who A&M has at quarterback now, this is a situation where Texas A&M is going to be able to blow out teams, right? I think any rational team will be able and better prepared to stop the zone read. What's very interesting is A&M, a top 10 team, with no conference losses, going into South Carolina for a night game, is a 3-point favorite. And Ole Miss, who had multiple losses going into South Carolina, a 9-point favorite. Okay? Very interesting. Actually, did Ole Miss – I'd have to go back and look. Let me see. I can look right here. Was that Ole Miss game before LSU? Okay, South Carolina was before. So Ole Miss only had one loss, but still they're a 9-point favorite. So what changed between now and then? I don't know. Has South Carolina played a little bit better? Maybe they have, maybe they haven't. But A&M is a 3-point favorite. So it wouldn't be that big of an upset if South Carolina was able to pull it off. I think the biggest takeaway from this weekend's games is the totals, right? These are the lowest totals I have seen for SEC games in quite some time. Arkansas Ole Miss, 53.5. Auburn, Vanderbilt, 48.5. Florida, Georgia, 51.5. South Carolina, Texas A&M, 43.5. Tennessee, Kentucky, 45.5. So these totals more closely resemble that of NFL games, right? I think it's more because of bad offenses and not great defenses. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I still don't think, and I was high on A&M going into the season. I had them over their win total. Beamer's so tough, though. Beamer's going to get you one big upset on the year. And he probably feels he should have beaten Alabama. He probably feels he should have beaten LSU. And now you get this spot here with Texas A&M. You have to stop the zone read. You got to make Marcel Reed throw it. I think we got some downward movement in the line here between Florida and Georgia, though. Let me see. I thought this game opened up a little bit higher. Very interesting. Yeah, John, go sign up for the Patreon, man. I did a full deep dive on them today. Patreon.com/LSU football. Okay, but LA Mama, I'm still going to go with Texas A&M. I'm still going to go with them. Now, would that help LSU? Maybe so. Pretty crazy. I hate that the World Series is over. I really do. I enjoyed that series. Yeah, the two biggest brands in the sport. And I grew up a Yankees fan. I'm disappointed that the World Series is over. Also, I've got to get this off my chest. And if you, we can get back in LSU football if we want to. But, y'all, I don't know what I could do with these Pelicans. I don't know. I really don't know. Like, I don't know what to do with myself. What am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do as a Pelican fan? Whew. Yeah, I think if Adams was healthy, they would move Adams to guard, and then they just keep everything else the same. But shout out Paul Mavenga. That's why he got the thumbnail treatment today. Shout out to you, 6'5", from Buford. I want to see my my dog in her Halloween outfit. I want to see sis. There you go. Huh? Look at that. That's good. So that's a hat that Booger used to wear every Halloween. So there you go. Now, I am donezo, but I'm not done. If you want, and this honestly would be a pretty big help. I know some of you aren't able to financially support. I want you, whoever you are watching this right now, please. Please go watch my Gary Nussmeier breakdown from earlier. It's right there. If you want to see an NFL type of breakdown, go right there. Gary Nussmeier, Power Hour NFL, Drive Breakdown. Big shout out to all our super chatters. Kedrick takes home the top prize. LA Mom holding it down. LOL. Ha, ha, ha. That's funny, Nurse Court. Let's see. And Ryan holding it down as well. Look at Ryan got a doggo. Look at Ryan's doggo. Love to see it. Also, that is true. That is true. I am leaning towards the under in the A&M South Carolina game. If you are a business that you want to partner with us, just hit me up, powerhourlsu@gmail.com, or you can Twitter, Instagram, @powerhourlsu. Okay. It is Power Hour LSU. Boom. Happy Halloween to each and every one of you. Tag me in your Halloween photos. And tonight we are doing Slam and Salmon. Let's go. Let's go.